Say prayers. Together. Into the prayers. Om Namna Vyakhya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam Vashishtante Vasadrishiganayara Pratam Brahma Nishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim Swatma Ramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshina Murtimide. Verse 8. Together? Oh, no, not together. For this one. Repeat after me, please.
Vishwam pashyati karya karanataya.
Vishwam pashyati karya karanataya.
Swaswami sambandhataha.
Swaswami sambandhataha.
Shishyacharyataya tathayeva.
Shishyacharyataya tathayeva.
Pitrapudradhyatmana bhedataha.
Pitrapudradhyatmana bhedataha.
Swapne jagrati va ya esha purusha.
No, never mind.
Swapne jagrati va ya esha purushaha.
Swapne jagrati va ya esha purushaha.
Maya paribhramitaha.
Maya paribhramitaha.
Tasmai, together.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Sandhi.
Vishwam Pashyati Karya Karanataya Swaswami Sambandataha Shishya Acharyataya Tata Eva Pitra Putra Adi Atmana Vedataha Swapne Jagrati Va Yaha Eshaha Purushaha Maya Paribhramitaha Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Go to the third line just to see. You can see how kind of the different the word order in Sanskrit is so much different than in English. I don't know about in Swedish. You find the word order quite different. Yeah. So if you go to the bottom line, Swapne Jagriti Va Yaha Eshaha Purushaha Maya Paribhramitaha. It says Eshaha, so look in the middle, Eshaha Purushaha. This Purusha really means this Atma. But the Atma who is covered by the Maya, as though covered by Maya, causing the superimposition, because otherwise you can't say that the Atma, as we're going to say, the Atma sees. The Atma doesn't see, the Atma doesn't hear, but deluded by Maya, identified with the sense organs, okay? So I'll get into that more. But this Atma, this Purushaha, Maya Paribhramitaha, because of being totally deluded, Brahma is a delusion or confusion. It's also Brahma is, you can be wandering around in the forest kind of lost, you're just wandering. Pari, if you use wandering, which is not here, but just, it's interesting that Brahma can be kind of wandering, pari, all around. Here, it's, the sense is more of being confused completely in every direction that you look. Because if you're born as a jiva embodied within, from the beginning of time in this creation, everywhere you look, you're still a jiva, a person in this creation who is limited. Desha kala vastu vastu parichedaha. I mean, your parichedaha, you're circumscribed completely by time, kala, by desha, by space, by vastu, by being one object, not another. Like, I'm this person, not that person, you know? So that being totally circumscribed is true for you and for everything else in the creation. This is not that. And that goes to, will pervade the entire creation, even including the five elements. Space, which is all pervasive, is still different from the wind, which is different from the fire, which is different from the water, which is different from the earth. So the five elements and their elementals, you know, are totally, one thing is different from the other, and then all of the jivas, one thing is different from the other. And so this creation is a manifestation of manifold diversity. It's manifold diversity. And no matter which direction you're looking in, as long as you're looking, there's a subject-object relationship. And so all you're really experiencing is that pervasive diversity, all of which is pervaded by space, but everything is different from space also. Space is more subtle, so it goes through everything. But space is not air, and space is not fire. You know, space is not this body. This body walks through space. And so this is the paribrahma. Paribrahmataha means the maya paribrahmataha, the complete absolute diversity that we experience. The delusion is complete. There's not a peephole. You know, there's no Archimedean point where you can jump out of the maya and kind of look and say, oh, look what's going on there. You know? You are included in that absolutely, fully, completely sealed, you know, maya. You're in a product of maya and you exist within maya. Until you know. Right? So, this Purusha, because of the complete Brahma caused by Maya, right? The complete delusion caused by Maya. So this Purusha, who, because of the complete Brahma, the Paribrahma of Maya, both Swapne Jagrati Va, Yaha, who, in both the swapna, in the dream, and in the waking state. This is true in the dream and the waking state. You are someone inside of that maya, completely deluded by it, because everything about you also is part of the maya, you know, except for yourself, which needs to be recognized. But that's the problem. Until that's recognized, then you're just this person who exists in this creation, whether it's a dream world that you're projecting or this world that you're projecting from the standpoint of the self. So swapne, from the standpoint of the jagrat, your being, the atma, is projecting this whole creation. From the standpoint of the swapna, this jiva is projecting this whole creation. Both are bound by ignorance. Both there's ignorance. So this Purusha, who, because of maya, because of the delusion of maya, this Purusha, who, because of the delusion of maya in the waking state and in the dream state, then go to the top line. Vishwam Pashyati. He sees this universe. He experiences this universe in all these ways. I would say like this. Say that. Vishwam Pashyati. Then go to the last word on the second line. He experiences this universe, bedataha, subject, object, seer, seen. Beda means diverse or different. He experiences this universe with difference, especially seer, seen. And so if you say he experiences this world full of beda, full of division, right? Such as, what's the first one he lists? He experiences this world as being cause and effect, full of cause and effect. And we do. You know, this is caused by this. That's why we always want to know, well, who caused the universe? You know, what is the cause of the universe? What is the reason? Then we go from cause to reason. What is the reason this universe is here? Why did Bhagavan make it this way? Why couldn't he have done something different? What made him choose to do it this way? Or just assume, because we're contained within cause and effect, and with reason, there's a reason that this person did this. Okay. So we want not only to see, we always experience that there's a prior cause to any condition, so there should be a prior cause to the universe, but we say the universe is beginningless. There is no prior cause. If we say that universe is cyclical, comes into being and goes out of being from beginningless time, it goes into being, is sustained, and then resolves from beginningless time, what is the cause? Because it has never not been here. It has always been doing that. If you say that Brahman yourself is free of time, what is the cause? It's timeless. There's no prior condition for there to be a cause. You understand what I'm saying? This is because that's why it's a pretty big deal. You can't understand Maya without really starting to really think about this. Now say you accept what the Shastra says, and there's reasons for it, which we'll continue to go into. You accept that this creation is beginningless, is cyclical, but beginningless. Then if you ask, why did Bhagavan do this? Mm. He could have done better, you know? But it's beginningless. So where is the doer? Where is the doer or the creator of a beginningless creation? You see what I mean? Where is the creator of a beginningless creation? Creation was already there if it's beginningless. There's no first cause. You have to have a first cause for there to be a creator or a doer. The first cause can be responsible for the manifestation of the creation, but there is no first cause. You know, even when you get into what we call easily in terms of cause and effect, you get into what we call infinite regress. But if you get into an infinite regress, there's no place to stop. There's nowhere to stop. And so this causal condition becomes suspect because it itself is an effect. Right? If you look like this, this effect is caused by this. But this cause, since it's not a first cause, right, was caused by this. So it itself is an effect. And that goes on for infinity, unless you can come upon a first cause. And that's very difficult to come upon because it exists within time. The cause and effect that we know about exists within time, so there's no first cause. So our mind has to understand that logic. Because if you don't understand that type of logic, then a person will say, oh, well, Vedanta doesn't know, you know, what was the cause of this creation. Vedanta doesn't know how to answer that. And it's not that Vedanta doesn't know how to answer that. It's that when you go outside of time and space, there is no cause. If you say you take like this, Brahman, you recognize Brahman as free from time. It is timeless. It is free of time and space. And so, being free of time and being free of space, that means it also has no parts. If it's free from space, it can't have any parts. If it's free from time, it has no beginning. So how did Brahman begin then? So that's okay. Well, if Brahman is free from time, well, then how did it begin? Because we're totally enmeshed within this causality, within causality. But yourself, your being, which is Brahman, has no time. It's free from time. That means that the self, what Swamiji used to say, which it's very beautiful for me to realize it in this way. We experience a world that is time-bound. We have past, present, and future. And we accept that, past, present, and future. That's Nobody says, no, we don't. Well, yes, we do. You know, we know what the past is. We know what happened the last minute and the minute before, and we have that pratyabhijna I've been talking about. So, yeah, there is a marking of time, and a marking of time in the past, and then we expect to have a future. Right? The future is every moment, in fact, every moment of change is the future. But it just turns out that even though we have past, present, and future within time, we accept that, it's also true that we only ever experience the present. Mm. Only. You never are outside of the present, because the past is gone and the future has not yet come, right? Past is gone. So do you think that when you remember the present, you remember the past, that you're in the past? No. The memory is in the present. When you project about the future that you're projecting is in the present. So in fact, Swamiji says like this, okay, this present, which in fact, I'm not going to go too much into this logic, but it's also true, even what you consider to be a present, because of the infinite nature, infinite divisibility of time, even the present moment, you can't get a hold of. Right, because the moment's already gone. And he uses the example, like if you have 500 rose petals put together, you take a little, like from the puja, you take 500 rose petals, put them together, you have a needle, goes, in a moment, in an instant, the needle penetrates one petal at a time. One moment at a time. There's 500 moments now. There's 500 moments in that one moment that you thought was one moment. And so those moments are infinitely divisible, because as long as they exist within time and space, you can divide them. There's no way to divide something and come to just an infinite point. You know what a point is? A point takes up no space. You know? So spatially, a point, and time-wise, there's no such point. However, this infinitely divisible moment takes place in me. I am the presence of the infinitely divisible present. And we don't think about it like that. We say, okay, this is the present. Okay, don't get carried away here. This is our present. This is the past. And this is the future. Well, we really only experience the present. I am the presence of the present. That's our experience. Now, in terms of the me that is free of time and so is just the presence, you know, in which time takes place, this presence, my being, was it created? Has it ever been different? If it came into being, how did it come into being? From what did it come into being? Non-existence? That presence is being itself. What would be its prior condition? It's already timeless, so it can't come into being because it's timeless. But say you pretend, okay, it came into being. What did being, what is existence itself, come from? It either comes from existence, which is already here, or it comes from non-existence, which is not there. So this self that you are is the non-dual, timeless being, because of which the whole universe is known. Not as a knower, but just that timeless being that is me, is both being, the meanness, the being, which is consciousness. I'm not inert. Do you think that when you go do the Driksha Viveka, the seer-seeing analysis, you end up in nothingness or inertness? It's the opposite of that. Any type of meditative experience or any type of viveka, discrimination between subject and object, ends up only in consciousness. It doesn't end up in inertness. Inertness can't know anything. And so I'm not going to end up in inertness. I will be actually continually objectifying those things which themselves shine after consciousness. They shine after consciousness. They're anubhati, not bhati. Bhati means self-evident. All of the things I illumine are what we call jada, because they themselves are not self-evident. leaving me only as consciousness. So that's the reality, but by this paribrahmitaha of the Maya, I am subject to time, and I'm subject to space, and I'm totally limited by all of these things, and I see the whole world and all of my experience in terms of cause and effect. Cause and effect, and I want to know, what's the cause of this, what's the cause of that? Even if you go back into beginningless Maya, which even from analyzing it from inside of itself, the cause-effect relationship will never end up in a first cause. I'll teach at some point the Mandukya, and we can really just go through that in depth. But that going back into the cause-effect relationship just keeps going, there's no first cause. That means there's an infinite regress. That means there is no cause. There's an infinite regress where every cause is itself an effect. There really is no cause. This cause and effect dyad is beginningless. It's as beginningless as is Maya. So Maya, that's what we say, Maya is mitya. It has no being of its own. The being that it depends on is only my own self-consciousness, consciousness itself. The Maya has no being, it never has any being, never will have any being. It's infinitely divisible spatially, infinitely to infinite regress, infinitely divisible in terms of time. It is only really the conscious being which, because of which, it has any existence at all. And so upon analysis from a Vedantic perspective, it's mitya. And so this cause and effect analysis, the cause and effect resolves itself only into satyam mitya. Satyam, consciousness, but these are two orders of reality. Conscious being that I am, this conscious being that I am, is the cause of this creation having gone through no type of modification whatsoever. And this creation has no being, which is the effect, has no being except for consciousness, and this manifestation of parinama, of all of these modifications themselves upon analysis, have no being whatsoever. And so this what we consider initially as cause-effect just becomes the recognition of Brahman, yourself, as the vivarta upadana karana, the material cause, which doesn't ever change to become the effect, and Maya becomes the parinama upadana karana, which is what is responsible for this display in the form of this infinite creation, this infinite knowledge that is a projection of Ishwar, and from a projection of Maya. So Brahman with this Maya upadi, this is the nice thing. Maya, Brahman has this Maya upadi. Brahman has this Maya as an incidental attribute of itself. It's part of Brahman. But because it's an incidental attribute, it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman. So I could say, your mind or your imagination is an incidental attribute of yourself. It's the most amazing, beautiful, incredible thing that can cause problems too, bad dreams. But it is this incredible capacity that you have to imagine a world, to imagine a situation, to imagine whatever you want, without it bringing about any change to your being, to yourself. So what Ishwara has in total capacity, infinite capacity, all of the things that Ishwara has in infinite capacity, you have in small capacity. And so here, when we analyze karya karana, karya means effect, karana means cause, the karya karana, a prakriya, is very powerful. It's one of the strongest prakriyas, because it resolves this universe into satyam mitya, where the Brahman is non-dual, the non-dual self which can never be negated. That's what we mean by satyam. Mitya is that which has no being of its own, but is totally dependent on the self for its being. Otherwise, it's like if you pulled the clay out of a clay pot, pull the clay out, everything's gone, there's no pot. There's really only clay. And here, there's really only me. there's really only conscious being, not me in this body, mind, sense organs sense, not the ahankara me, but just the consciousness, which is myself, which is the self of you, which is yourself, which is the self of all beings, which is the self of Ishvara, which is really the non-dual self of this whole creation. In fact, really, there's nothing here but me. Everything else is, you can't find it. Upon analysis, you can never find it. Everything, every way you look, it goes into an infinite regress. But anyway, we look at that because of the Maya, the Brahman, experiences this creation through the Maya Upadi, experiences this creation in terms of cause and effect. Everything has a reason. This happened because of this, that happened because of that. The analysis of that will end up only in the Satya Mitya. Another way that we see the creation, but Bhagavan sees the creation, when deluded by Maya, as a jiva. Swaswami sambandataha. In terms of the relationship to Swaswami is the one who is the owner. The Swaswami is the owner of what? The owner and the one who is owned. Swaswami sambandataha. Between the owner and what one owns. Between the employer and the one who is employed. Or the owner and what one says, this is mine and this is mine. I have this. This person is my, is my servant. This person, works for me. This is my person. This person works for me. I own these things. That's the Swaswami. Sambandataha means that relationship. Owner-owned relationship. This is mine. Or Shishya Acharyatya. This is beautiful also. This universe is perceived in this type of Veda. These are just giving examples of this Veda, this duality, where Shishya is the student, Acharya is the teacher. Here's the student, here's the Acharya. My Acharya, my Guru. I'm the student and this is my Guru. So I have an Shishya Acharya relationship. That also is Mithya. Who is the self of the Acharya? And who is the self of the Shishya? One non-dual self, only one me. I am both the Acharya and the Shishya. I am both the teacher and the student. And the whole teaching of the Upanishads is to reveal that truth. That's why the Sampradaya, this teaching tradition, is likened to the passing of a candle. One lit candle flame lights this candle flame, which lights this, which lights this. And that candle flame remains exactly the same. And so the passing of this knowledge is just the recognition, passing on that sampradaya. The teacher has recognized the self and now passes on that sampradaya to you, and now you recognize yourself. And the self that you're recognizing is the self that the teacher recognizes, is the self which Dakshinamurti recognizes. You are Dakshinamurti, in fact. It's said in one of the commentaries, you yourself are Dakshinamurti. And he's teaching you that you are that you are him. Okay, so another one, Pitra Pudra Dhyatmana. Also, the Veda, a certain type of division then you make is between father, son, or mother and father and son, or aunt and niece, or all of these relational dualities that we have, mother, daughter, grandma and granddaughter. All of these relationships are also something very important to me, This is my mother, this is my father, these are my sisters and my brothers, these are my aunts and uncles, these are my nieces and my nephews, and my grandnieces and my grandnephews. I just now have a grandniece. She was just born. So now I have a grandniece. So sweet. But we divide the world up into this, Also, this is my partner. This is my husband, or this is my wife. These are my children. This is our society. This is our culture. This is who we are. In fact, their family has maintained up to this time, their gotra, their lineage, they can actually chant all of their relatives back up to their rishi. It's a big thing to have maintained your gotra. A lot of times in modern eras, that's lost. In the modern era, the gotra is lost. But for many Brahmins especially, that gotra is maintained. And so they can chant from their family that they are to now. I think it's not matrilineal, it's patrilineal. It goes all the way back to the first rishi. That's considered very sacred, very important. It's also viewed as kind of a tragedy if that gotra, that lineage has been broken.
Thousands of names?
I guess so. It goes way, way, way back. So I don't know how they shortcut it or how that works, but Swamiji's talked about it. I've never really heard somebody do it. And so often there's a breakage and there's a break in the gotra, but that's what I've been told. He said it's really difficult for them if they lose that gotra, because the gotra places you here now at this time, and it identifies exactly who you are in your lineage. So when you're doing a ritual, usually the gotra itself is chanted, you know. Anyway, so that's just another Brahma, right? It's just another Veda. All these divisions, all these Desha, Kala, Vastu, Paricheda, all of these divisions, all of the ways that we chop up the world or chop up our experience, we're limited, it's circumscribed. Paricheda means circumscribed by space, Desha, by time. And these guys are really going to... But there's somebody, one of those animals is also doing it across the way. So, Desha, Kala, Vastu, by objects. This object is different than that. So, our world is infinitely divided. Why? Because of this, the tremendous power of Maya that we experience in the waking state and in the dream state. For Ishwar, the waking state, we call as Vishwa, Virat. Jiva's Vishwa. The subtle body we call as Taijasa, the one that is lit up, consciousness, lit up as consciousness, as knowledge. And then Hiranyagarbha, the golden womb. Golden because knowledge, subtle. The golden womb is what we call for Ishwara, that subtle body for Ishwara. And then just the word Ishwara, so Ishwara, Hiranyagarbha, Virat. Ishwara is just Maya in its causal condition. So Brahman with its Maya is what we call Ishwara. And Ishwara, when the creation comes into manifestation, it becomes Hiranyagarbha, the infinite Sukshma Sharira, which goes through this process of Panchikarana that we talked about, becomes fivefold, becomes Virat, the physical world. And then that Ishwara, from the standpoint of the Jiva, is suffering from then Ajnanam Prajna, the one who has ignorance, prajna, and that one becomes Taijasaha, the subtle body, which is part of Hiranyagarbha, part of the subtle part of the total causal subtle body, which then becomes Vishwa, this physical body individual. That Maya contains everything that exists within time and space. And so when you think about what exists for you within time and space, everything except the self. Your body, your mind, your sense organs, your thoughts, your moods, your emotions, your relationships, even the ahankara, and ajnanam itself. All Maya. Ajnanam itself is beginningless as is Maya. Because really, the ajnanam is just the other side of Maya. If you're born within Maya and not as Ishwara, then you're going to be limited by the upadi, and all of your sense organs are also limited, and so the ajnanam is natural. There's not much you can do about it, except slowly gain knowledge. The only knowledge that is going to be complete is atma-jnanam, knowledge of yourself of Brahman. Yourself is the only thing that doesn't divide infinitely into parts. So no knowledge out here for jiva is going to be complete. You can still divide it a little bit more. And it also has a context which is infinite. Yeah. So there's no way really to gain. You get practical knowledge here, useful knowledge, but never complete knowledge of anything. But here, in reference to yourself, because yourself is non-dual. You either know it or you don't. It doesn't have any parts. There's nothing different from it for there to be a second thing. So when you know it completely. But not when you're a jiva, not as a jiva within this creation trying to know the creation or to know what Ishwara knows. It's not possible for the limited to know the limitless or the possibility. But you can understand it in the broad strokes of mitya, of maya and mitya. In those broad strokes, what is true here in the life that you experience is true all of the way through because of subject-object relationship and the nature of the self, the relationship of what is known to, that what is known to the self, which is just pure knownness or knowledge. So there's a resolution. Yeah, that's going on. That's enough. We can stop here. Don't get any things I don't want to open up right now. Just a little teaser.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.